Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing Refinance Now, Hypnotizing Scams, and $1,000 Rental Cars.
Right, dude, this is our Friday Flight episode where we take a small sampling of the stories that we came across this week, and we're here to deliver the best headlines and how they pertain to not only our personal finances, but the personal finances of our listeners.
That's right, we got some good stuff to get to this week. There's a lot going on in the financial world this over the past 7 days. But before we get to that, Matt, real quick, I wanted to mention that I have a new line item in my budget.
Ooh.
As of this week.
And, do you share?
Okay, so basically, Emily and I, we realized that there, especially as like we're starting to hang out with people more and more, we wanted to include a line item for like neighborly fun. This is like what we're calling it, basically. Like hangs with
wholesome neighborly fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Hangs with the people around us that we haven't been able to spend as much time with recently. Obviously, we've been doing like, you know, fire pits in the backyard, stuff like that. But we're ready to like, you know, cocktail hangs, you know, or a beer hour, whatever, craft beer hour, or maybe even like holiday gifts. I remember last year I was like, I want to get like some gifts for at least, you know, the neighbors that live really close to us. But we didn't really have it in the budget, and so it was one of those things where I didn't do it. And I'm like, this year, I want to get everybody like a little something, you know, make them feel special. So, yeah, neighborly fun is a new line item in our budget.
Nice, dude. I like that. And what's cool about budgets is that you can customize them to however you live because, you know, you explaining that category, I'm like, well, that for us, that kind of sounds like our giving category, and that kind of sounds like entertainment. But for you, man, if you know that you want to spend that kind of money directly for your neighbors, that's a good way to include that. You know, the longer we know each other, I feel like I'm slowly converting you into become more of a budget person. Whereas like back in the day, you're like, you know,
I was
like,
anti-budget.
You're anti-budget. Like you tend to wing things and you're better at winging things than I am. And so I know for my personality, like I've had to implement a budget from day one in order to make my money behave. And I appreciate the ability to look at my, you know, my spending, look at the data, have the stats in front of me. And so for me, it was more of a necessary tool. But I like for you that y'all are finding that it's something that is opening you up to be able to do things without having to think about it. You know, like I just mentioned giving, and that's actually, this is literally a conversation Kate and I had today. Like one of our daughter's teacher's father, actually, that's kind of a long chain there, but her father died recently, and Kate said, hey, I want to make sure that we're able to gift them a meal out. And so she's going to buy a gift card at a local restaurant. But that's virtually not a conversation we had to have, right? It's not like something where it's like, oh, do we have that in the budget? No, like it is in the budget. It's an expense that's planned. And so she was able to just act on it without feeling that stress in the moment. That's how we like to talk about budgets, man. It's just a plan for your money. It's almost like a calendar, right? It's just like a schedule for your dollars, just like we have events on our calendar to make sure that we do the things that we actually want to do. Some things come automatically, like sleep. Like, you don't really have to put that on the calendar, right? Sleep and work. But other things, like, you know you want to do them, but a lot of times it's easy for them to kind of fall by the wayside unless you actively plan for it.
Yeah, and like we talked about earlier this week, there's going to be more temptation out there to spend your money. And so I think budgeting and planning for some of these things, like putting that line item in your budget, if you know it's something you want to do, like do it now so you can be prepared for it, as opposed to realizing, you know, months down the road, there's all these things I want to do. I haven't budgeted for them. And like, can I actually make them happen now? That's a worse position to be in. Start planning now is what
yes.
we would suggest.
Yep.
All right, Matt, let's get to the Friday Flight, the stories we found interesting this week in the financial world. And let's talk about tax returns for a second. Tax refunds, as it turns out, are taking longer than usual to get processed, especially if you were one of those folks that made less money in 2020 than you did in 2019, and you were eligible for more stimulus money because of it. The IRS is requiring manual additional verification of that income, and that just takes some time,
yeah.
right? We figured that would be the case again this year, that the IRS was going to be behind again because of the pandemic. They were behind last year when it came to processing tax returns and dishing out refunds. They're not just behind, they're like 29 million returns behind at this point. I just want to let people know too, you're not going to be able to talk to anyone at the IRS either. A Washington Post article earlier this week literally gives you a 1 in 50 chance of talking to a human if you call. And, you know, that could even take hours to get in touch with that person. So, yeah, we would say because of the pandemic, the IRS being chronically understaffed, all you can do is wait for your refund. Just be patient and don't bother reaching out, trying to call the IRS's number unless you love wasting your time, because that's really all it's going to be.
It's like a 1-800 IRS number, right?
Something like that.
Actually, have you received your refund? Because we filed mid-March, and just last week, we actually got a refund.
There you go.
$1,100.
I did not have a refund this year.
You owe a little bit, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's right. Well, speaking of taxes, you may have heard rumors of tax rates going up, specifically capital gains. And there's actually a good chance of this happening, although not likely the Biden proposed rate. But first, let's give a definition of what capital gains tax is. And it's simply the tax that you have to pay on the profit from an asset after you sell it. And so, for example, if you've been investing in a brokerage account that's taxable, like a Robinhood account, and you sell a stock at a profit, those gains are subject to capital gains tax. And so the bad news is that Biden's proposed tax plan will nearly double the highest capital gains from 20% to 39.6%.
It's a big shift upwards.
That is a massive increase. Again, we think it might come down a little bit from that 39.6%, but we will see. But the good news is that this is for those who make more than $1 million a year. So, you don't have to worry about it, Joel. not yet,
not
at least.
Not going to impact us, probably.
So this is probably going to happen. It's just not likely going to affect you. It's going to affect something like only 500,000 households in all of America, a very small percentage.
Yeah. One of the caveats too, Matt, you said capital gains tax is what's assessed if you sell an asset. Same thing would be true if you had a rental property and you sold that, right? You would pay capital gains essentially on the appreciation, the difference between the price you bought that home for and the price you sold it for. But if you own that asset for less than a year, you don't pay capital gains, you pay ordinary income tax rates. And that is actually something that messed up a lot of Robinhood day traders earlier this year. They were expecting, I'm going to pay 15% tax on the gains. But when you trade frequently like that, when you're getting in and out of assets, you don't pay the capital gains tax rate, which is preferred. You pay the higher rate, which is the rate at which your ordinary income is taxed. And while we're talking about investing and investing in brokerage accounts, Matt, there was this really fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal this week, and it documented three photographer friends. Were you one of them? I know.
Luckily was not, because these guys didn't end up in a great position in the end.
No, they didn't. Yeah, they started investing heavily during the pandemic. I mean, what else was there to do, right? Photography was kind of out the window.
I feel them. That's basically when I was like, okay, now is when I will switch full time to podcasting.
That's right. Yeah.
Or try to.
For those listening who don't know, Matt used to be a wedding photographer. And yeah, the pandemic was a perfect time to switch to podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
All the way. But yeah, these guys were messing around in Robinhood and talking about it back and forth constantly. And basically, they started putting lots of money in once the market took a 30% plunge. They rode the wave as markets bounced back. They made lots of money doing that. This boosted their confidence. And so they decided to make even riskier bets. And that is where they took a misstep, right? They went from seeing their portfolios up four times what they had originally put in to incurring losses of about 33%. So they had less money than they started with. And so, yeah, I think the lesson from this, it was this fascinating article if you want to check it out, is one, not to day trade, is two, not to get too risky. And so we suggest, our philosophy, how Matt and I invest, is buying and holding low-cost funds in tax-advantaged accounts. I'm sure those guys were super pumped as those account balances were skyrocketing, but then, man, how deflating to see it essentially taken away from you overnight, which is what happened to them.
Yeah, I feel like another lesson too is just to be careful like who you surround yourself with, because it seems like these guys spurred each other on.
Yeah.
And I think if maybe they had just been kind of siloed and were doing their own thing, they may not have taken as many risks. But I mean, they're like, the article is talking about how they were like texting back and forth like 50 times a day. They're having these video conferences talking about what stocks they're going to trade that day. And they were just going all in. And so I think if we had any friends that were reaching out to us, we would have been like, now is a good time to maybe max out your Roth IRA and get invested in a low cost index fund. But the tips we would have given would have been like FZ Rocks or VU, HODL baby HODL. Do you say HODL or HODL?
I don't know, HODL probably.
People say HODL because they think it's like a derivative of like hold, basically a misspelling. But then someone on the news was saying HODL because basically it's an acronym for hold on for dear life. And so they were saying HODL. I've heard more people say HODL. So I guess you say hodl, I say hodl. But yeah, let's shift to credit cards, dude. Morningstar, they published an interesting story last week about how credit card companies are taking advantage of inherent behavioral biases that we have as consumers. And no, we're not going to backtrack on how we feel about credit cards in general. We still think that credit cards are probably the best tool for spending for multiple reasons. But it is important to be aware of how your behavior biases can work against you and how companies attempt to exploit that. And so one of these devious tactics that these credit card companies use, according to Morningstar, is that less educated folks are receiving credit card offers with much worse features, like more substantial late fees, higher interest rates. And there's also research that suggests that folks, that they often pick a credit card because of emotional appeal rather than which card is going to offer them the best rewards or offer them the best terms.
Yeah, it's like, oh, can I get the credit card with my favorite Disney character on it?
Dude.
Done. Like, people literally make decisions based on that stuff.
I mean, and I will say, like, back in the day, like, if I had a couple cards, there was one that I used less because I just didn't like the way it looked.
Yeah.
Like, back in the day, I had this one that was kind of clear, and I kind of liked the way that one looked rather than the one that wasn't clear.
Yeah, I understand.
I felt special.
You're not alone. Other people make decisions based on that too. And of course, like, we're not perfectly rational beings,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Like, advertising plays into all of our emotions, even those of us who think we're completely
advertising
unaffected.
Branding as well.
Yeah.
It all plays a role.
Completely. And I think companies, you know, are trying to sell a feeling, right? That's what companies like Coca-Cola are doing. Like, it's less like drink this sugary beverage, and it's more like, this is how you're going to feel when you do. And if they can make that emotional connection, then they're likely going to make a sale. But then how do we make sure that we don't fall for the marketing hype if the product isn't right for us? Well, we would say when it comes to credit cards, well, there's a little secret that we've got, and it's that we don't really care about the late fees and the interest rates. Like, that's not something I look at when I'm signing up for a credit card. Why? Well, because we believe when you use a credit card, you should be paying your balances in full every single month, and you don't even have to worry about what those fees are if you're that kind of person. So then the main consideration is whether or not the benefits the card is offering aligns with the way you spend. By the way, Matt, I did want to throw in, I saw this LendingTree survey. And if you do have credit card debt that you're trying to pay off, this survey found that 83% of folks who asked for an interest rate reduction in the past year, they got it. And so if you're one of those folks carrying credit card debt, one of the things we would suggest is to call your credit card company and ask if you can get a lower interest rate. And in most cases, they will say yes. And so that is something you should be doing, like, today, maybe tomorrow,
yeah,
if
why
you
not?
Haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it does not hurt to ask. Also, we saw this article from NerdWallet, and they detail how many fintech companies are skipping a credit check in favor of other methods to ensure that you are going to be a good candidate for the cards that they offer. You know, we've talked about the Pedal card here on the show before. They're the first fintech company that we know of that took this approach. And they've been successful in signing up folks who don't have the best credit out there, you know, and they base this on other factors, right? Such as like their bank account status, bill payment history, as well as income evaluation. And so some of these fintech companies might be looking to see if you pay your cell phone or your Netflix bill on time every single month instead of running a hard credit check on you. So this is good news if you have bad credit. Some of these new companies are Grow Credit, Chime Credit Builder, as well as Tomo Card. So if that's you, if you have less than stellar credit, make sure to check some of those guys out.
Yeah, we'll link to those cards in the show notes. But that is just definitely one thing to remember is credit cards can be great. They are great if you use them properly. If you can't handle using a credit card well, though, you know, you shouldn't be using one because the downsides are steep for people who don't pay their bill off in full every month. All right, man, let's move on. Let's talk about student loans for a second. For anybody with federal student loans, you still don't have to pay that monthly payment, which is nice. But there was this recent survey from CNBC, and many millennials said that their student loans weren't worth it. I found that interesting. Like, I know that student loans have gotten out of hand in our country, right? Like, it's been shocking and saddening to see how many students have graduated with just intense amounts of debt loads. But I was still surprised to see that 52% of older millennials said that taking on debt to get a college degree wasn't something that they would do again. And I guess that was just surprising because I know college degrees don't necessarily have a huge benefit for everyone that gets one, but they still positively impact most folks that get one. Also, that made me realize, like, obviously you and I, Matt, we're all about people going to college for free or cheap, if it's possible. Whatever way you can, cut the cost of college in your life. However you can take out fewer student loans, avoiding them as much as possible, that's the best move. But it's also critical for anybody out there who's thinking about going to school or going back to school. It's critical to be on a mission to get a specific degree that will allow you to be gainfully employed at the end of that degree. There's research out there that's going to help you figure out which degrees are going to pay off the most. I would look to that research before I chose a specific degree. And it doesn't mean that if you have no desire to be an engineer, you should pick that just because it's the highest paying degree when you leave school. But it should at least help inform, you know, what kind of decision you are going
to
make.
Yeah, we wouldn't recommend for folks to take out massive loans and just blindly go to college without a plan necessarily, right? Like, it's good to have a plan and to know what it is that you're trying to achieve by going to school. And so, yeah, you know, it's no fun to graduate and start paying a mortgage-sized monthly payment to your student loan servicer. But at the same time, dude, you know, stats from the Federal Reserve show that folks with a college degree have better job security and they earn more for decades. The value proposition of a college degree, it has gotten worse over the years, but getting a college degree is still worth it for the vast majority of folks. We just want to make sure that folks are doing it responsibly, that they're not taking on massive amounts of debt in order to get that degree. Do it affordably. And we actually talked about this with Ron Lieber from the New York Times back in episode 337. If you haven't listened to that one and this sounds interesting to you, we'd recommend that you check it out. All right, Joel, we've got our ludicrous headline. We're going to talk about some scams that are making their way around as well. We'll get to all of that right after this break.
All right, we're back. The Friday flight continues. And now it's time to hit up the ludicrous headline
of the week.
There we go.
So last week I screamed it.
Like this week I'll whisper.
Opera singer style. And so I'm not even sure if that picked up, but of the week.
There you go. Okay. So this one, this ludicrous headline comes from Hawaii News Now, which is not a source we've ever used on the Friday flight before.
I don't think we have.
but it was titled, "Why Are Hawaii Visitors Cruising Around in U-Hauls? Blame the Pandemic." And that was just too interesting to not click on.
Like, what is this going to be about?
Yeah, what's happening there? Well, it turns out, the story about rental car shortages has been popping up in other publications around the country. There's a severe rental car shortage right now. And that means if you're looking to rent a car to go on a trip or because you've landed somewhere and you needed to get around, you might find yourself paying an absurd amount of money to get that car, especially in more popular destinations like Arizona, California, Florida, and Hawaii. And so, Matt, in this article, on the island of Maui, for instance, the cheapest rental car for one day, like this isn't for a week-long rental, this is one day, was a Toyota Camry for $722.
A single day.
For one day.
Just for one day. Yeah. Convertibles were going for $1,000. Insane, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to ride around with the top down, it's going to cost you a pretty penny.
I would be walking everywhere if that was the case, or just like, you know, but sticking my thumb out on the side of the road. So like, yeah, people are trying to get crafty and they're renting moving vehicles to get around while on vacation. The New York Times had a great article from the Frugal Traveler about the nationwide rental car shortage too. Just it's interesting to see many of the major rental car companies, they sold off a lot of the cars that they had during the pandemic.
We actually talked about this.
Low.
Yeah, we talked about this just about a year ago. Like, for instance, Hertz.
Yeah,
they
you could get a deal
were,
on one.
Yeah, they were filing for bankruptcy and they were liquidating their fleets. And so we were like, okay, this is a good time to get a used car. And turns out it was because we then started to see used car prices continue to creep upwards as the year progressed.
Yeah, but now, you know, those rental car companies are like, dang it, we sold the fleet that we needed now that the recovery's happening. Demand is back in a big way, but they don't have as many cars on hand
exactly
to fulfill that demand. It just made me think, like, so I got to go to Maui one time and I did the road to Hana, which is this beautiful, beautiful drive. It's like, I don't know if it's like 2 or 3 hours. And I'm just thinking it's kind of tight, you know, two lane road. I just like thinking about trying to do that in a U-Haul.
U-Haul truck? Or like, I mean, I'm picturing like a Lowe's or a Home Depot rental truck, right? Yes. It's like $25. You get it for 90 minutes, which is a deal, by the way. Like, I am all about dropping like $20 and having this flatbed truck to be able to load a bunch of, you know, stuff for the yard up onto. But yeah, I'm imagining driving one of those around. And when you're not used to driving one of those, like, they drive differently than the little car that you're used to driving around in the city, you know? I can only imagine that it would be tricky on the road to Hana or whatever this
thing
is.
I would think so.
Yeah, and so this increased demand, this has, of course, led to higher prices when it comes to car rentals. And so, if you absolutely need to rent a car, do a couple of things first. First of all, book a refundable ride with one of the major car rental companies. You can always cancel without paying a dime, and so that's really great.
Yeah, so even if you have to book it at $400 a day, like, and you know you're going to need one, just book it because it's refundable. Like,
exactly.
You don't even have to show up and pick up that reservation.
Yeah, you can cancel it, but you've got that reservation snagged just in case. But then look at multiple locations to book. You can look at different in-town locations near where you'll stay in the airport. And then check a few different discount travel websites, right? Look at prices on Hotwire and Priceline. Also, check out Autoslash.com. That's another great site that will continually shop the price of a rental car without you having to. And so remember, you have your original rental booking as a backup. But as soon as you find this lower price, you can go back and cancel that booking. And dude, also too, folks can check out Turo, where you can rent a car from a local, right? From an individual. As rental prices go up, I could see individuals renting out their cars more and more, just, you know, to be able to capitalize on the ability to make more money from that car, from that asset just sitting there in their driveway. And, you know, maybe that's something that a lot of folks listening are thinking. They're like, oh, wait a minute. I live in Maui. I should download Turo.
Yes.
And make a killing because the demand's high.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I would totally do that.
And yes.
For our listeners that live specifically in some of those places that we mentioned, if you live in like Phoenix or Orlando or Miami, like if you live in any of those hot cities where people are visiting and you want to make some extra cash, Turo is a wonderful place for you to do that.
It's worth considering for sure.
I would think you'd be able to do well. Also too, yeah, depending on where you're going, attempt to take public transit, including bike share, ride share, of course, like Uber and Lyft can be cheaper than, you know, some of what the daily rental fees will cost you right now too. Like if I was on Maui, I'd be taking Uber. I would not be renting a car.
Oh, yeah.
And also too, Matt, on the note of cars, there was this article in Ars Technica, and like, this is not about rental cars, but it was about why minivans rule. And
of course, yeah,
it just made me proud to be a minivan owner. Like we totally agree with that, of course. I feel like it's time for a minivan resurgence, and we want to kind of help push that. Like this article talked about why minivans make more sense than SUVs, why they're more functional for lots of folks.
They are so much more practical than an SUV that's hard to get in. Like, could you imagine like getting into something that's a little bit higher with like the kids? I mean, they have a hard enough time, you know, clambering into the vehicle.
I guess once your kids are older, like, sure, maybe, but we got young kids, and so minivans make a whole lot of sense.
Dude, it's like anything in fashion. Like, it always comes around. Yep. You know, like, minivans used to be popular back in the day, and then I feel like it for the past 15 years or so, it's like swung back to SUVs. Like when I was a kid, it was all about the minivan.
Yeah.
You know,
and can we make them cool again? Like, can you and I single-handedly
yeah
do that?
Okay. Well, it's just like fanny packs, you know, like fanny packs are back. It's it's all about the attitude. It's about how you wear it.
Yeah.
Right.
But they have to be at least 10 years old minivans. Like those are the cool ones.
Well, mine's not quite there.
You're almost there.
Is it? Yeah, mine's 9 years old.
Yeah, it's like 10 model years old at this point, though.
2012, that's true.
And I do want to know, too, Matt, after Monday's episode, where we talked about cars with Leanne Shattuck, she had some great advice. Have you named your minivan yet?
No, I haven't. I feel like we're not those kind of people. Like we've never named our vehicles. Maybe I should, though, because like we talked about with her, like you tend to take care of things that you name because they kind of, you imbue them with a personality, right? Have y'all named yours?
So no, I also have not. Mine is kind of old school and powder blue, but I feel like maybe we should
makes
include
me think of like Dumb and Dumber, like hanging out by the bar, putting out the vibes. If only mine was orange,
the sweet tux. Yeah, I know that would be ideal. But let's post a picture actually of our minivans on Instagram this weekend, and let's have our listeners actually chime in.
Let them name it.
Name our minivan contest,
dude. Well, here's the thing: if someone actually names it, like, are you going to stick with it? Are you going to call it?
I'll stick with it. Whoever gives the best nickname for both of our vans, we've got to call it that.
All right. All right, let's do it. I'm down with that. You know, dude, in our house, we've named houseplants before because I don't know. You like water them. You take care of them. If you want them to grow and nurture, like you want to
look good today, Cindy.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like talk to them. But we've never done that with our cars. This will be a lot of fun. On that note, let's shift gears. Do you like that? Speaking of minivans and dad jokes, a lot of folks now have a second chance to refinance their mortgages as rates have gone down in recent weeks. A few months back, we discussed the likelihood of mortgage interest rates going up from their all-time lows, and they actually did start to move up in a meaningful way, but now they've crept back down, and 30-year mortgages are back in that 3% range. And so if you missed your chance to refi a couple months ago and you are a good candidate, it makes sense to pull the trigger now. And that is if you can find a lender who is willing to move quick enough to secure that mortgage, to lock in the rate, and actually close in a decent amount of time. I've talked with multiple friends and neighbors who started the refinance process, dude, last fall.
No way.
And have only just closed. Like, literally, I was talking to a buddy of mine. It took them 5 months. And I'm like, wait, who did you go with? He went with one of the big banks, which is a part of the reason why. I was like, why did you do that? You need to go with somebody local, somebody who specializes in mortgage underwriting.
Or one of those good online, you know, refinance.
There's so many better options than the big banks out there.
That's like literally the worst option.
Yes. Yeah. And so we started our refi kind of early to mid March, and we closed last week. And so for us, it didn't take us 5 months. It took us 5 weeks.
There you go.
This is a lender we've worked with before. So yeah, find a great local company, a great local credit union. These are all much better options than going with one of the bigs.
Yeah, but who knows how long rates are going to stick where they are. So time is of the essence if you're going to get a refi in and if you're going to get better terms on that home loan. Matt, let's talk about scams for a second. Mackenzie Scott, the former wife of Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon, has been giving away billions of dollars. And we talked about that a few months back. Like, it's been just incredibly impressive what she's done in giving away massive amounts of her fortune in basically no time at all. She seems like just a wonderful person. But right now, email scams in her name are proliferating. It turns out that her method for giving away that money, those funds, has actually been pretty cool. She's not making this like PR splash. She's not trying to make a name for herself and garner all the headlines about how much money she's giving away. She's trying to do it more on the DL. And she and her team are actually just emailing organizations that are doing good work to let them know that they're going to be making a donation to that organization, to that nonprofit.
Super cool.
Yeah.
I love that approach. She's just kind of bypassing the bureaucracy of having some sort of trust, you know, like she's like going directly to them.
Yeah. And she's not like tweeting about it and
boots on the ground,
making herself look like the coolest person ever. She's just doing it. And like that approach, though, has actually led to a bunch of copycat scammers who are claiming to be from the Mackenzie Scott Foundation and they want to get
which doesn't
money.
Exist, by the way.
Right. Yeah, right.
Like,
yes.
That's made up.
Yeah. And they even have like a Facebook page set up where you can go check it, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously, it looks kind of fake. But yeah, they have taken some steps to make it look like you're legitimately getting money, including using a fake bank to make it look like that money is on its way to you. But first, you've got to pay a fee to access that money. And that's always a huge red flag when someone tells you that you're getting money. If you have to actually send some of yours over first, it's definitely not legit. But yeah, there was an article talking about people that have been taken advantage of by this scam. Wanted to let you know that it's out there. Scams like this are a dime a dozen these days, it feels like.
Yeah, dude, let's keep talking about scams. I came across this other story that involves hypnotizing. Have you ever been hypnotized?
I have, actually. Just once.
What?
Yeah, but my grandpa was a psychologist, and when I was like 11 years old, he attempted to hypnotize me. I don't think it worked, though. Yeah.
He attempted hypnosis. He did not succeed in having you kind of like walk around and quack like a duck.
No.
you were doing that anyway, probably,
so
at 11 years old,
he was telling
old,
me
sure.
that stuff is kind of like all for show,
okay.
But there are ways that you can hypnotize people, and then actually, so, you know, I think based on what he was saying it was for, he would say it was successful. I didn't feel like anything changed, but I don't know, maybe subconsciously I'm like kicking butt in life because I got hypnotized when I was 11.
You didn't feel like a warm sensation and realize you just peed your pants?
No.
Well, dude, there is this interesting article in the LA Times asking if a scammer can hypnotize you over the phone. And they actually interviewed a real hypnotist. And it's just an interesting question because some of these scams that we come across seem to be so easily recognizable that you wonder how people fall for them. And writer David Lazarus, he details the story of this pretty smart lady who was scammed by someone over the phone. And she even wonders if she was hypnotized. And the answer from the expert hypnotist that they interviewed is that you actually can be put into a hypnotic state over the phone by someone who has the right technique. You know, different folks obviously are going to have different levels of susceptibility to hypnosis.
My mind is Fort Knox. It cannot be breached.
But really, this just makes me want to make sure that I avoid those phone calls in the first place.
Yeah, something else when it comes to scams too. The best thing is to make sure that these calls aren't coming through at all to your phone. And that's super easy to do. If you have an iPhone, just go to settings and then click phone and then select silence unknown callers. This is a feature that's been around for a couple of years now, and it keeps us from getting, you know, up to a dozen junk calls every single day. And it's just as easy to do on an Android phone, which is what I've got. Go to settings, block numbers, and then toggle on block unknown callers. A lot of us know we should do this, but maybe we haven't done it yet. It's not just going to prevent scam calls, but just the annoying unknown number calls that come through constantly, especially the ones who want to buy the house that you own. Like, how many of those am I getting these days? So yeah, some of them still slip through, but yeah, make sure also at the same time, not only are you doing this, but encourage your parents to do it as well, because they might be just as susceptible, if not more susceptible, to some of these scams.
Dude, yeah, seriously, I feel like a lot of folks our age, like our generation, they know to do that, but I mean, I bet there are a lot of our parents out there who don't do that. Maybe you're visiting with them and their phone's kind of buzzing off in the background. They kind of roll their eyes. They're like, oh, I'm sure it's my best friend out in LA who wants to like give me some money, that kind of thing. But in reality, like, we don't want those calls coming through at all. And actually, on top of this, the FCC is actually going to begin holding cell phone providers responsible for anti-robocall efforts in the future, this coming fall. They are requiring these providers to document their efforts towards increasing the number of robocalls that they have been able to eliminate, which is awesome news. And it looks like there will be penalties, like these, like potentially massive fines for the companies that don't make meaningful progress. And so this is good news. Even if you do have the calls not actually ringing your phone and it kind of, you know, goes straight to being silenced. But if you hate just seeing all those missed calls, you know, in the app, and it shows you like how many missed calls you have. And like when I've got 12 of them, that's a pretty hot day for me. I'm like, oh my gosh,
I'm so popular.
Yes. But it just makes me realize that, like, man, there is just so much room for improvement in this space. And that's something that we can look forward to.
No doubt. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We hope you have a great weekend. And if craft beer is your thing, like it is ours, we hope you have a nice craft beer this weekend.
Maybe you even enjoy a flight, a little sampler at your local brewery.
A little sampler of like four different beers.
Exactly.
That's the way to go.
All right. That's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up at our website at howtomoney.com.
We'll see you back here on Monday for a new Ask HTM episode. But until then, best friends out.
Best friends out.